Trib Live Radio presents the Steelers Roundtable with Trib Steelers writers Mark Cabali, Ralph Polk, and Chris Adamski. We talk Steelers 365 days a year. The best Steelers coverage is on Trib Live Radio. The Steelers Roundtable starts now.
Hello, welcome everybody. I just figured since Mark Cabali's the star, he is the, we're just all sort of the supporting cast.
I'm all talked out on my show on Monday. Did you not hear me say before we got on the air, Buzz, it's all yours, Buzz?
I did not hear that, no.
So it's all yours, Buzz. You're hosting the damn show.
Well, this is a pleasant surprise then.
What do you mean, Buzz? You did it last week?
Didn't think I'd do it. The word surprise doesn't mean it's something that has happened in the past. It means that at this moment, I am taken aback because I was not expecting this event to happen.
Is that why
that's what the word surprise means.
Hey, Ralph. Ralph's on the phone with us here. Ralph, he rolled in at 8:59:59, so it's not like he busted his rear end to get here.
I had plenty of mental preparation.
All right, let's hear it then.
These Pittsburgh Steelers are 6-4. They have a big game. No, they don't have a big game coming. See, I did that on purpose there. They don't have a big game coming up this Sunday because this is their bye week. And don't get me started on people who get mad that it's called a bye week because the NFL calls it a bye week. And technically, it's not a bye week because that would be for the playoffs when you skip around to the playoffs. It's actually an idle week. But it's actually in NFL literature where it says bye week. So this is the bye week. The Steelers at 6-4. All things considered, I would say that considering you're down to – let's go through the list here. Three quarterbacks have started games. You're on your fourth kicker. Your number two wide receiver missed the first five games. You've lost your all-pro running back for the season. You've lost your all-pro center for the season. You've lost your left tackle for the season. You've had other injuries involved in there, too.
So you're saying right now, Buzz, they're fortunate to be 6-4 at the break.
I think that being 6-4, all things considered, they can't be too disappointed. I'm sure they look back at the Baltimore game, the game they could have won, they should have won. If they had a kicker, they would have won. But it's still looking back on whole to be 6-4, put yourself in this position down the stretch with people getting back healthy, at least in terms of the guys that aren't out for the season. Your quarterback gets healthy. You put yourself in a position here. You lead the wild card race to make the playoffs, and then who knows what could happen.
I think if you look at it as a whole, guys, as a whole, 6-4, you're thrilled, absolutely thrilled. Now you get, like you said, you could pick out, okay, we should have won Baltimore. We could have won Cincinnati. We could easily be 8-2. But you know what? You could go the other way there, too, and say San Diego and even possibly Arizona. When you take in the whole realm of everything, the whole scope of everything, 6-4, I guess you're not technically – I mean, we've seen it before in Cincinnati being a collapse. This would be an ultimate collapse, but hey, it's still there. All of a sudden, Steelers' schedule don't look that bad, but considering 6-4 going into almost December football, they have to be absolutely thrilled because now they're heading to a stretch of the season where a month ago it looked tough. Now all of a sudden playing Seattle, who's 2-2 at home and is 4-5, playing Indianapolis without their quarterback, playing Cincinnati, who's all of a sudden can't find the end zone, playing Denver with Brock Osweiler, then Baltimore and Cleveland, terrible. All of a sudden doesn't look that bad, so I think they're pretty fortunate and like where they're at right now. Ralph, do you agree or disagree?
I agree with everything both of you say.
Wow, wait.
You're not the best color man in the business for nothing.
You're not the best color man in the business. Would you like to expand on that, Ralph?
Or drop in there, Ralphie.
Are you still eating your Egg McMuffin, what it sounds like?
I actually struggled to get downstairs in my basement to do this live via satellite from Akron, Ohio. And to tell you the truth, I got to tell you, I think Mark touched on something. And you can look at the teams. First 10 games and say it could have gone almost any way. And I think at the start of the season, there were a lot of us, including me, who said at this stage in the season, this team will be lucky, to be even par and trying to, hold on and fighting, these next four games to even have them give themselves a shot, when they go to Baltimore, Cleveland at the end of the season, to make the playoffs. But Mark, you mentioned the fact that, the games that they could have easily lost. And I throw a couple of more. I actually think the games they should have lost, was at St. Louis, You think about, Kendrick dropping a touchdown pass that would have been the difference. You think about Oakland making, the four turnovers and making the mindless penalties a young team sometimes make. That's a game they look back at it, and you talk to those guys in the locker room, they still can't figure out how they lost that game. So that's a situation where I think the Steelers, they've done what a lot of good playoff teams do. They survived the murky waters and things have gone bad. They've done that. And then look too at some of the couple of free agent signings that they've had in the last couple of years. Players who impacted this roster, maybe perhaps no one thought they would. It started with Mac Mitchell. For all of his quirks and his antics and the things maybe I don't like that he does on the football field, he's still been, let's say this, he has been a leader on that defense. And then the other player is D'Angelo Williams. D'Angelo Williams has stepped in when he had to. Didn't have a great game on Sunday because the Browns actually schemed. Hey, look, if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us, with this skimpy leg guy who's coming in for Landry Jones, his backup quarterback named Ben Roethlisberger. Well, you know what happens? That backup comes in and he just, shreds the defense. So I tell you, those two guys have made a huge difference, I think. And the Steelers got to be happy about what they did inside of them. And one other player who I thought has really helped this team and maybe – maybe his impact hasn't been as great as people think it is, but think about some of the plays this kid has made. I think two plays that helped this team win a football game, and that's Roosevelt Nix. When you think of signing free agent, this team a couple of years ago had a number of undrafted free agents. This may have been one of the best ones.
The whole point of this team being able to be where they were or just overcoming injuries, and we just blow it off and just say it's Tomlinisms, next man up and whatever, but the Dallas Cowboys lost seven games in a row without their quarterback. Mm-hmm. The San Diego Chargers, I believe, are 2-7, and they're just decimated by injuries with the offensive line, the wide receivers. Green Bay's finally finding some injuries, and now they're all of a sudden they're struggling. Look what happens to Denver when they lose their quarterback. All of a sudden they look awful. So there is something to it to be able to get through that rough stretch and be able to put yourself in position to be able to make the playoffs and do some damage. They've been here before. If you want to say 2005, you can say 2005 by being, maybe a 6 or a 5 seed and be able to run through the playoffs on the road the whole time. Ramon Foster told me, hey, if we have to be road warriors to get San Francisco, I think we can do it. 2008, where they went down the stretch in December and played tough team after tough team after tough team, won the majority of them, went on to win the Super Bowl. So I'm not saying this team's going to win the Super Bowl, but you have to like where they're at considering all the stuff they had to endure. They're up over, I haven't figured it out in a couple of weeks, it has to be close to 50 man games lost by their projected starters. And that's kind of crazy. You okay with that cough?
I don't know.
Your cough button's has been used about 30 times, but the problem is they probably could hear you coughing through my...
Yeah, I'm sure they can. That's all right.
Anything to add, that Buzz? Buzz left for 10 minutes, by the way, Ralph. Not coming back.
The thing about it is I think there's no doubt you can say that there's respect and admiration that they've went through these injuries and they're 6-4. I think you can credit the Steelers for that. And to get into this point, you're right. You've cited all those examples, the Cowboys, the Chargers, whatever it is. I want to go back in NFL history, see how many teams have started three quarterbacks and then made the playoffs. Three different quarterbacks in the course of a season.
How in the world are you going
to
do that?
I'm sure. You telling me Elias wouldn't be able to know that, or Stats Inc. or somebody would know that.
There's a difference between Elias Sports Service or Chris Adamski Sports Service.
No, Chris Adamski Sports Service means call Elias and or whatever.
I've never
contact
called
somebody.
You just
I used to contact Stats Inc. all the time, but they won't take my calls
Stats
anymore.
Stats that Ken Wonderly. No, I'm just trying. There's probably a team or two.
Yeah, because it is early in the season, but if you go back far enough, I'm sure there
Was that three winning quarterbacks? There's another one, too. Three quarterbacks started games and had wins.
Even though Landry's is very
Landry's
but it counts.
The other ones,
but you're right. To have three win a game and to have three quarterbacks start multiple games each, that's also if you start adding all these qualifiers, I guess you could set up with one of them named Landry.
This was posed on Twitter yesterday, and it's an interesting thought. Now, since Bruce Gradkowski's obviously his contract's up. Do you go about on this offseason and try to extend Landry Jones for a long-term backup to Ben Roethlisberger, who's going to be 34 next year? I mean, people are probably screaming, saying, a month ago you wanted to cut the guy, and now you want to extend him. My personal thought is he's a backup quarterback, and you don't extend backup quarterbacks. Yeah. You sign them when their contract's up.
Correct.
But do you feel buzz?
I don't think, is that
a possibility?
Well, the only reason you'd extend him early is to protect him from, if you think another team's going to swoop in and make him a starter, give him starter money. Actually, if you're Landry Jones and you're his agent, you have confidence that that could happen. If you think Ben Roethlisberger is going to get hurt next year, or at least you're playing, you're not hoping for that, of course, or anything like that. But if you think there's a chance of that, and Landry starts a multiple game, you know, starts eight games next season, looks pretty good doing it, then all of a sudden he's going to be a low-level starter for somebody. You know, Houston this year, you know, Houston hopefully figures out their quarterback.
But quarterback,
some team's going to sign him.
As your franchise quarterback keeps getting older, the chance of him getting hurt keeps getting greater. So all of a sudden, a backup guy is a little bit more important.
I see what you're saying, but I don't know if you're even if you're Landry. Although maybe you take the guaranteed money, you take the you know your niche, and you're going to be a backup. I think if the reason why backup quarterbacks don't get signed like that is that they have incentive too to be free agents, because if they somehow show that they're starter capable, then they end up being a starter somewhere.
Hey Ralph, people are probably out there screaming, saying, I think there's a little bit bigger issues. Landry Jones is calling Ralph right now, asking what's going on. There's a little bit bigger issues in the offseason, like Kelvin Beachum, David DeCastro, who am I, Le'Veon Bell. So I don't think Landry Jones is going to be at the top. But what do you think? What's your thought on possibly extending him after the season just to protect yourself in a backup quarterback role?
Well, I think Chris is right. I think ultimately his contract, they're just going to sign him when his contract expires. I think that's where you are with him. Because the Steelers, let's say, they're pretty confident, you know, that there'll be a few bumps and bruises all the way with Ben, but he's probably going to play another 2 or 3 years. I mean, they actually, if Tom Brady has lasted as long as he has, Peyton Manning has lasted as long as he has, then you got to think, you know, that Roethlisberger now, you know, for the first time in a few years, is behind, you know, we don't talk about this enough. I think behind a relatively decent offensive line. No, they're better than decent now. You know, in the thing, you know, I talked to Merle Foster the other day, and he said, you know, this is, you know, Cody Wallace, and that's also, sometimes you're hard on him, Mark, but Cody Wallace and Villanueva has stepped in and done a pretty decent job of protecting Ben Roethlisberger, especially on Sunday. So my point here is, if they can probably extend his career just the way they extend the time he has in the pocket. And for Landry Jones, what's it going to hurt you, you know, to sign a new deal and spend another 2 or 3 years behind Ben Roethlisberger? It wouldn't be, you know, setting a bad precedent here. But the truth of the matter is, and you're right, every quarterback in the league wants to start. You know, is Landry Jones really a starting quarterback in this league, or is he a Hasselbeck type of guy? Is he a guy who's going to be a career backup? You know, like a McCown. You know, so I envision him being that guy, not a starting NFL.
Well, that's the thing, is even guys like McCown, they've been signed now twice to be. He's been signed twice to be a starter in the last 3 years for teams. It's going to be a lower level team. It's going to be a team that probably drafts a young quarterback who they're trying to develop, and they're just going to be in a placeholder. It's always going to be situations like that. Landry's just blowing up the line right now at the Paul Castle, apparently.
He's pissed at Ralph.
But
says Ralph doesn't want to sign me.
But it is, you know, how about twist it this way?
Actually, it was Antonio Brown. I told him not to call me.
Bruce Gradkowski, the Pittsburgh kid, comes home 2 seasons, doesn't play a meaningful snap because Ben Roethlisberger
faced
out a snap. Well, in the playoffs he did, I guess.
Well,
but
I guess.
But you're right. He didn't play a snap at all. And then all of a sudden, the year he gets hurt in the preseason, Roethlisberger gets hurt twice, and there's two other quarterbacks that start. But I guess them's the breaks, as they say. Bruce Gradkowski kind of got the – but that's the life of the backup quarterback. You never know. It's all about opportunity. You don't know when that opportunity is going to come about. And so maybe – I don't know. I don't know if I talk myself into it or not. Maybe if you're Landry Jones and you have your chance now to cash out and get a – you know, hey, even a backup quarterback salary.
What's a backup quarterback salary, though?
$1.5 million? I don't know.
What's veteran minimum? $900,000, $1 million?
Well, you're not
– there's not too much of a difference there. You have more of an opportunity here than probably going somewhere else. I mean, Landry Jones is not going to be picked up by a – 31 other team and say, hey, we're going to compete for our starting quarterback job. I think he's pretty destined to be a lifetime backup guy, and that's, you know, that's all right. People's made
but,
a living,
you know,
on that.
Listen, Brian Hoyer got waived like four times one year. He's been starting the last 3 years for different teams. Anyway, go on, Ralph.
You know, I really believe this. When I look at the roster of some football teams in the NFL, and we keep saying it, but I'm not too sure the Landry Jones couldn't be a star. You know, the Brian Hoyer in Houston, I'm not sold on Bortles in Jacksonville. Look at each corner. I'm not sold on a lot of these guys. And I'm thinking to myself, Landry Jones is just as good as a bunch of chumps who are starting in the NFL. I really believe that way. You know, so I think maybe we get ahead of ourselves thinking that Landry Jones can't be a starter. Yeah, I'm criticizing myself already on this show.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at, is if you're Landry Jones – we're talking way too much here about this topic, by the way.
But if you are
Landry Jones, and more importantly his agent, you say, you know what, roll the dice, play next year in Pittsburgh under your last year of your contract. If Ben happens to get hurt, we aren't rooting for that, but if it happens, you play eight games or whatever, you show yourself to be a viable starter, all of a sudden then you have value to other teams. If not, what's the worst that could happen? Unless you really go out and stink out the joint, you could probably still come back to Pittsburgh to be the backup anyway.
I think we should move past Landry Jones.
I think so, too.
Somebody else with a little more of an ego. Antonio Brown. Okay, he's had his 27 catches and his 400 yards. But that, not only did he do the front flip, but now he's talking about doing some other things, a backflip, a cartwheel. My, oh, my. What do you feel about Antonio Brown? I give my statement right here. My goodness, you can celebrate all you want, Antonio. Why do you have to put yourself at risk of doing any type of flips? I know that helps your image, helps your branding. Maybe Sports Illustrated, Sports Science, ESPN all of a sudden likes you. But it does not do anything for that next man up team mentality, one for all team effort. It doesn't. It's just very – it was a very egregious – I'm going to make up a word. What word? Antonio seems to make up words. I'm going to make it up. What I'm saying is you can celebrate, but don't do it in that fashion where, you know, a little bit off balance and all of a sudden there's a pop of a knee and you're out a week and you lose that game. I'm more concerned with he said, hey, I'm finding some other things to do. I mean, am I being an old curmudgeon or should we just say, or should Mike Tomlin say, Antonio, if you ever do that again, I am fining you, blah, blah, blah.
Well, first of all, you know that's not going to happen. You know, that the Steelers are going to demand he not do it. Here's my problem.
No, is that Tomlin's problem? I mean, is that an issue, though?
No, I don't think it's an issue. Here's the issue. And this is what Antonio Brown should be concerned about. You know, one, you know, you continue to do that when you show up the opposition. At the end of the season, he's playing the Bengals and he's playing the Ravens and he's playing Cleveland. These are division rivals. Cleveland's not going to long forget that. If they got any kind of whatever in them, they're going to still be a little bit upset about their antics, you know, showing them up. This is what the rules say. You know what? You can taunt and show people up. These are some kind of things that used to happen all the time. But now, if I'm a defensive back in this league, I'm waiting for this guy. I'm waiting to get a clear shot so I can just rip his head off. Because, you know, this is the last time you're going to show me up like this. That's what he better be worried about, not worried about Tomlin and the league. And the other part, too, is when I watch Antonio Brown do this, I want people to stop whining and complaining, you know, about, you know, Cam Newton getting in the end zone and then doing his thing. You know, if you want to stop Cam Newton from doing a little dancing away from the team, from in front of the opponents, and the reason why officials don't throw the flag, because he does what Daniel rules. You know, that 10-second rule where he's doing his little dance, he's pointing at the fans at home, whatever. But, you know, that to me is different. You know, unless some other player, you know take exception as did in Tennessee, you know, that's, but still the officials say, that's not Tomlin because he's not looking at you. To me, when you do all these antics of jumping just before you get in the end zone, you know, that was a borderline Tomlin kind of thing. But, you know, that's his biggest problem is how the rest of the league, you know, players in particular, see that.
I mean, he can dance. He could do his little river dance. He could do his little with his little shimmy, shake, shuffle, shuffle. I don't think anybody's complaining about that. I like to see when those guys have some fun as we saw on the South Side on yesterday with some crazy antics going on and dancing. That's fun. That's entertaining. Once you put yourself at risk, and I'm sure hope that Mike Tomlin did have some sort of talk with him, say, yo,
No, you know he didn't.
I mean, it's okay. Like I said, it's okay to celebrate, but be a little smarter. And I think that's the biggest issue. Without calling anybody out and saying specifically, well, I'll say it. I mean, whatever. You know, some of these guys aren't very bright.
He's gonna
that's
take
all
it,
it is, anyway. Right? Do you want to blow out your knee if you're Antonio Brown, a year and a half away from getting paid probably record amount of type of money? Why would you even take that chance?
He's not thinking about that. He's not thinking about it. And plus, it wasn't something instinctive. It's something he had planned to do.
Yeah, plus, you just don't do front flips. You know what? If I'm going to score a touchdown, I'm not going to say, oh, let me do a front flip. You've had to practice that. And Will Allen said Monday, he said something, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a trampoline home and practice that. There ain't no darn way. Absolutely he has a trampoline at home. And you don't just do that. You have to practice that, right?
To me, the fascinating part to me, or the part that's worth discussion, the whole thing kind of bores me. But what is interesting to me is whenever, and not that Ben Roethlisberger is an authority figure, because he's not an authority figure. He's a teammate by definition. However, he's the team leader. He's the quarterback. He's the, you know, is he the oldest player in the offense? Whatever. He's the, you know.
He's the oldest player on the team other than Harrison, right?
Is he? No, Greg Warren's got to be older.
He doesn't count.
But the point being is that, either way, he's the face of the franchise, as much as Antonio might want to be the face of the franchise, and he tells you not to do it, and you pretty much – that's the interesting part to me. It's like when the head coach – we've seen it just as that, too, where the head coach tries to get somebody not to do something and do it. Heath Miller had to talk to Antonio Brown before. That, to me, is more fascinating than the fans or the media or commentators or whoever it is saying, well, I don't like Antonio Brown doing this.
Commentators and media.
There's a difference between commentators and media. You don't think there's a difference between commentators and media? Although we're acting in both roles right now.
Common media.
Because right now we're commentating. We're not being very
media.
But that interesting part to me is that he's all but ignoring Ben or sort of flaunting it to Ben. Now, does Ben not have any power? Is Ben annoyed by that? That's the part of the whole equation that actually I feel like is worthy of discussion. But I don't want to talk about that anymore.
What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. We've talked about front flips and the third string quarterback so far. Now the backup, I understand at the moment.
Well, it is a bye week, so we're not going to be here next week because it's
we can't really preview.
We probably should look ahead to Seattle Seahawks, knowing that next week is Thanksgiving Day. So we're, you know, some of us have.
We're not going to be here Thanksgiving Day.
Well, maybe I will. Some of us have to work, but you know that Seattle game to me is all of a sudden. You know, if there's one game they can afford to lose, I mean, they all count as one, but one counts a little bit more. It would be Seattle. That's not going to be an easy. I don't care if they're 4-5 or if they'll be 5-5 after they beat San Francisco. They give up 40 points to the Cardinals. It's just ridiculous. A team the Steelers gave up 15 points. I don't know what's wrong with Seattle. Russell Wilson's not making plays. The defense has given up a lot of yards. They don't have really many. I mean, if you look at the Seattle offense, who do you say is like, yeah, I'm scared of him? I don't think there's anybody there anymore.
It's crazy how Jimmy Graham's sort of
Yeah, you thought Jimmy Graham came in. Lynch is banged up. Wilson doesn't make plays. They have no receivers whatsoever. Their offensive line stinks. You know, so I think it's a very winnable game. You think they'd go out there, Ralph, and win that game? I mean, they haven't won there since 1983. They've only won in Seattle once in their history. When's Seattle come into the league? 76. They've only won out there once, and that was in 1983. And I don't think we can.
Was Keith Butler on that team?
I don't think we can. I don't know. Check that out, Buzz. You got a rough. Can they go to Seattle and win? Or better yet, is do they need to go to Seattle and win?
No, I think they go to Seattle, and that's a game. I think there's two games that they can lose. You know, Seattle and Baltimore. I mean, as bad as Baltimore is, I mean, it's just because it's the rivalry, just where things are the way they are. You know, the Ravens are going to be desperate, you know, to do something. And Seattle is already in a desperate mode, you know, to figure out how to keep their playoff hopes alive. Now, with the effect, you're playing teams that it was supposedly pretty decent. You know, we can also throw, you know, the Cincinnati situation where they're going to have to prove themselves again down there in Cincinnati. So the Colts, too. These are teams desperate, you know, to get in the playoffs. You know, Indianapolis tied with Houston at 4-5. You know, so this is. Now, they're playing teams that on paper, it looks like now they can beat them. But the problem is that they're just as hungry as you are now. And they get, some time to kind of get themselves together. I don't think they'll win in Cincinnati. And something tells me they probably won't win in Baltimore. But they can win the rest of the game.
I think they have a better chance.
You're right, Mark.
Baltimore.
Just because this is a game, you really have to win a game in Seattle because it's a non-conference game. it won't hurt them as far as trying to, you know, get that wild card position. But, you know, still, you don't want to lose it. You don't want to lose it. But I can see this is a game maybe they can lose. I agree with that.
But do you believe in that theory of you need to be hot in December? I mean, I think I looked this up a couple years ago, and I don't think that's really the truth. I mean, mostly it's had to do with Indianapolis, who used to just peter out at the end of the year because they would already have it, you know, they already have the everything locked up, so they would just lose their last two games. I mean, is it important for them to, even if they go into the playoffs at 10-6, would you rather them win their last three or go, you know, 1-2? I mean, do they need to be hot going in to have any shot of, because they were extremely hot in 05, and I told you they were very hot in 08, and they won a Super Bowl both of those years. Is there anything to that, or is that media?
Well, I don't know necessarily that you have to be, you know, winning 4 in a row, 5 in a row down the stretch, but I think that for sure every single year there's many teams in the NFL that are different teams in December than they are in September. Like the Bengals last year at this point, like they kind of do.
Bengals this year.
Yeah. Look like world beaters, and by the end they're different. Now that might be a trend with one franchise, but there's so many teams that just seem like different teams. They're not the same. That you look at Denver in September, and Denver right now. You can go down the list of teams. Kansas City in September, and Kansas
That's
City
the other
now.
Way around.
Yeah, exactly. But it's but there's teams that are. So if you think of Kansas City now, finishes even if they lose, you know, they go 3-2 down the stretch. But if they end up being 10-6 after starting 1-5, I guess that didn't make any sense mathematically. But you get the point. That they're a different team, and they're not necessarily that they're hot right at the end, at the very, very end, but they are, if the record might not reflect that they're a better team than they are, than the record is, because they're different than they
were
in December.
I like this team right now if it continues to stay healthy like it is, you know. No more other major injuries. I talked about it a lot of times that they're basically their breaking point at the offensive line. One more injury and, you know, see, they're at their breaking point, maybe even at the defensive line, even though they haven't had any injuries because of depth issues. But if they stay healthy, which they've proven they haven't been able to, down the stretch, I think this team has the best shot. I mean, I'm not even counting out. I'll say it right here on the air on November 18th, 2015. It's today, 19th. The 19th. So this isn't taped. It's the 19th. That they still have an outside shot of winning this division. But does it matter?
You know, I think. Wait a minute, Mark. You know, give me here. You know, I agree with you almost that's everything cool. You said today. That though, you're out on a limb that's really very fragile.
Well, they got it. Okay, let me
look,
explain.
As bad as the Bengals are always this way. They're a sprinter, any distance rate. You know, and but to answer your question about, I do believe that momentum matters. You know, I believe that about any sport. I don't care what it is. You know, I think you have to go into the playoffs feeling confident. Feeling as if you can win a championship. The Steelers obviously felt that way, you know, when they won the Super Bowl 10 years ago. You know, they are 20 years ago. There's a certain amount of momentum that they had when they went into the playoffs. You know, so to me, I really believe this football team is capable, more than capable, of making a deep run in the playoffs, because they're going to be facing a lot of teams who really started out just like the Bengals, you know, potentially in the playoffs. You know, Denver or Indianapolis or, you know, maybe even a conference semifinal game against, or the divisional playoff against somebody like Cincinnati. They can play teams in the playoffs that they can beat. You know, so that's the thing about what I'm sure Mike Tomlin is thinking to myself, you know what, man, we get into the playoffs, I don't care if there's a wild card. When you look at the teams who are going to get into the playoffs, they can beat every last one of them with the exception of New England.
Well, let me explain my Cincinnati now. They're 8-1 right now. Go to Arizona, which is an easily losable game. 8-2. You have a game with the Steelers. There, all of a sudden, you're at the 3-loss threshold right now. So all you have to do is make up a game. This is all depending on the Steelers
the
winning.
The division tie. The Steelers have 2 losses. So the Bengals have to lose another game in the division to either Cincinnati or just either Baltimore.
They'd have to do division
to a bad division team. The Steelers
got the Browns left and the Ravens.
Yeah, they have to lose to one of them and the Steelers. And that, even then, you would go into the next tiebreaker because both teams would be 4-2 in the division. So
I still think there's an outside possibility.
There's an outside.
But the Steelers are going to have to win a lot, obviously. They're going to maybe have to win out. I don't think it matters that much other than the home game, because if you're a 5 seed, you play the AFC South, who I'd rather play than being a 3 seed and play the Jets, Bills, Dolphins, Chiefs, whoever.
In your scenario, if the Steelers win out, I think 12-4 is better than Denver. They'll pass Denver they'll play Denver, so actually they'll beat Denver then in your scenario, which means that they'll probably be the 2 seed then.
What I'm saying is,
but I don't think they're winning out.
I like
think that's
their
the most
chances
your
right
scenario.
Now, going on one of these runs, heading down the stretch here, even if it's
I just think
beating Seattle, Denver, Colts. I mean, can you see the Colts coming in here and winning right now?
But
I
if
really
the Steelers go 5-1. The Bengals still need.
They're the Bengals. This can happen. I'm not saying I'm putting it at about 9.6%, but it's better than 0%.
We can add anybody in the city of Cincinnati plus anybody in the Steelers locker room. That's at @Mark/Cabola. I don't even know what your Twitter name is. Just all the angry stuff we get. Anyway, Ralph, we'll get to your point in a minute. We have to take a break. We have to pay the bills. We have
pay
to do
the bills.
We gotta, you know, we gotta.
Boy, you've been watching too much TV, Buzz.
We'll be right back here on the Steelers Roundtable program.
Sip into the holiday spirit with Dunkin' Donuts holiday cookie-flavored coffees and espresso drinks. Tis the season to indulge in holiday favorites like peppermint mocha or sugar cookie. And now enjoy the delicious holiday taste of a new hot or iced snickerdoodle macchiato. Handcrafted with layers of rich espresso, steamed milk, and foam. They're a delicious way to get in the spirit and are only available once a year. Enjoy Dunkin' Donuts' collection of holiday cookie-flavored coffees, lattes, and macchiatos today. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta, located on 6th Street in downtown Pittsburgh. Fast and free delivery. Give them a call at 412-281-7060. Lunch specials starting at just $7.49, with selections including small grilled chicken salad and bowl of soup, 2 cuts of pizza and a small garden salad, penne pasta, garlic bread, and a small salad, half a hoagie and french fries, or half a hoagie and a can of pop. That's 412-281-7060. You can even order online. Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta in downtown Pittsburgh, and online at ilovegiovannis.com. Robert Morris University basketball has been to a combined men's and women's 6 NCAA tournaments in the last 8 years. Last spring, the Colonial Men captured their first NCAA tournament win since 1983, and they've won 8 Northeast Conference championships overall, the most of any school in the league. Men's coach Andy Toole has led RMU to 4 national postseason tournaments in his first 5 seasons. Now RMU is poised for another strong season behind Player of the Year candidate senior Rodney Pryor. And this is the final season for women's coach Sal Biscaglia, who has led RMU to its only 3 NCAA tournament appearances in women's basketball. So make your way to the Charles L. Sewell Center, pack the chuck, and root on the Robert Morris Colonials as they make their way to more tournament madness. For tickets, call 412-397-4949. That's 412-397-4949 or online at rmucolonials.com. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. Bud, Bud Light, and Coors Light 30-pack cans, only $18.99. Plus Miller Lite and Yingling 24-pack cans for only $14.99. Winter and Christmas beers are arriving daily. Give the gift of good cheer this Christmas with a gift card to Duffy's, your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills, online at duffysbeer.com.
Hofstadt's Cafe Monaco Restaurant in Oakmont, online at hofstadt.com. And the Chelsea Grill, an American grill in Oakmont, online at chelseagrilloak.com. Visit us for lunch and dinner. Bring the family before or after the football game. And good luck this season. Both restaurants located on Allegheny Avenue in Oakmont.
Now back to the Steelers Roundtable on Trip Live Radio.
Welcome back to the program. It is a program, Mark, because we all get along so well here on the Steelers Roundtable.
Steelers Roundtable program. Did we pay the bills? Did we pay enough bills there?
I'm not part of accounting. The only bill I care about is on every other Friday, and actually, or one Friday a month, whenever there's something in my check.
Don't be talking about that fourth wall, man. Leave that up. We do this out of the love of our fans here who download on Trib Live Radio.
Nothing I like better than getting up at 7 a.m. and fighting traffic.
Traffic does kind of stink. And
that was your arrow down last week, huh?
Was it? It was bad today, too. I got caught in Swinburne Street up there in Oakland, and I did the old U-turn run around, and I got screwed anyway, so I just went back to where I was, which leads me to believe that you got to be patient with traffic. Death, taxes, exactly. And traffic, Ralph. That's three things. It's undefeated, baby.
That's right.
Can't beat traffic. If traffic got you, it got you. You can't beat it.
I had to miss out on my Dunkin' Donuts this morning, one of the sponsors of this program.
Yeah, they're not
Anyway, I would expand on something Ralph said there because I thought it was interesting.
Hold on one second. Ralph, listen to this one. This is a buzzsaw story. He brought it up. Buzzsaw scrummaged through old Tribune Review Sunday papers and stole all the Dunkin' Donuts. A coupon so he could get 99-cent iced coffee. He took like a dozen of them. You believe that? Ralph has no – either Ralph's not there or he don't care.
I'm saying he's only telling that story, Chris, because he's idiot. He wish he had thought of it first.
Well, you want to tell him the truth there, Buzz? The truth of the matter, buddy, he learned it from me. I said, hey, Buzz, I just took seven of them. All right, what were you saying?
By the way, if I can get back to what I was actually saying, but first of all, let me say something that's totally irrelevant. Jeff Gordon will win.
Unlike talking about coupons.
Become a Sprint Cup champion. Anyway.
Jeff Gordon hasn't won since when? Like 97?
Last playoff win was for the Bengals. The Bengals, I had this conversation maybe five or six different times with people this week. And as much as I would like to think that no team in the NFL can blow a four-game lead, in a division.
Oh, you're coming back
Mark, you're absolutely right. They can do it. they are the one team that can blow a four-game lead. They really can.
What's going to end up happening?
Why? Because Andy Dalton has shown the signs of coming back down to earth. And I'll watch, A.J. Green. Now, my biggest criticism of A.J. Green throughout his career, he's a great wide receiver, is that sometimes he plays like he just doesn't care. There seems to be a lack of motivation at some point in him. But defensively, if the Bengals hold it together defensively, that's the difference. And I say that because, ironically, coincidentally, I think that's the key to the Steelers' success.
You've been hanging around.
If the Steelers continue to turn up defensively, they give up a lot of yards. But that's just in scoring. And that's the real bottom line in pro football. I think if defensively they continue to hold folks out of the end zone and just give up field goals, they're going to be a tough team to beat down the stretch. And when it gets cold, they're going to turn that ball over to Angelo Williams, and you're going to see, you'll see Roosevelt Nix play a much bigger role than he did when Roethlisberger came in the game on Sunday. They're just going to pound the ball at teams, and then just hope their defense can continue to progress. I think that's what you're going to see in the game.
You brought up Roosevelt Nix, Ralph, like four times. You probably should write a story about it.
Yes, because I want Buzz to know his guy has made a difference, just like he said it would.
You should
right on, Chris.
Wait. We're going down this path. I'm bringing up old, what's kick return guy's name?
Kenzel Doe.
Kenzel Doe, who Buzz said was going to make the team.
I didn't say he was going to make the team. I said he had a chance to make the team. I bet you Kenzel Doe would be better than the Dree Archer and Jacoby Jones experiment.
Jacoby Jones hasn't had an opportunity.
The opportunities he has had, he drops the ball every time or doesn't return it. Through two-game sample size, but I bet you Kenzel Doe could have done that the last two games.
No opportunity. Special teams is not a part of this game anymore. It should be deleted. Every kickoff should be put in at 20-yard line. Every punt should be 50 yards or something. I don't know. They have to come up with, it's just irrelevant anymore. Any type of return game is irrelevant.
Okay, I want to touch on a couple of things here Ralph said. Steelers defense, first of all, ranks fifth in the NFL in scoring, even though they're 22nd in yardage. And they've played now five of the top eight offenses by yardage, and five of the top 10 scoring offenses is who they've been on their schedule. So they've been playing good offensive teams, and yet they're allowing few points, the fewest points in the league at 19.1 per game. So that's actually interesting.
Do you know something?
Yes.
The Steelers are 5-0 when giving up a 300-yard passer. They're 1-4 when they don't give up a 300-yard passer. Does that make any sense to you whatsoever?
It makes a little bit of sense because teams that are behind throw the ball and end up racking up yardage. So that does make – But
I don't think there's ever been a time where Steelers are out ahead, other than the 49ers
San Francisco.
Game, that was the case.
I guess you have – well, Cleveland, too. Cleveland was out of reach pretty much in the second half.
Well, that's an interesting stat, though.
But you're right. Okay. I mean, all right. I'm not going to – I'm sorry to dismiss you're excited to talk
about it. No, what I'm saying is you're right. I mean, you look at the games they struggled on defense was probably – Well, it's hard to even say anything about that Patriots game, but mostly the Raiders game because they gave up touchdowns instead of field goals.
And the Ravens game, Justin Forsett ran on them a lot. I think Chandarick West and Justin Forsett.
You came close to pronouncing his name right.
those two, West and Forsett, those two running performances, I think, are black eyes in the Steelers' resume. Other than that, because Tom Brady going to do what Tom Brady do, and Rob Gronkowski, and I know there was a couple misassignments and things they could have done better against New England.
Hey, Tua was out during that KC game. And he had one long run at the end, so it's
– Yeah.
Cleveland just didn't even try to run, which was shocking to
me. Speaking of Tua, I was talking to Tua about the – another thing somebody should write about the run game defense. And it said, hey, every game other than Kansas City and Baltimore are – well, it hasn't appeared yet. Nobody knows I've written it. Kansas City and Baltimore are the two games where they allowed a 100-yard rusher. And he said, I can't wait to play Baltimore again. All their rushing yards came against one formation. Of the defense, which I thought was interesting.
It sounds like Ralph got a play to diagram on December 26th.
and the Kansas City was – no, he didn't play in the Kansas City game. But the other thing about – and building again off of what was something else Ralph said. Ralph's been very insightful today.
Talking about
the AFC playoff picture. There's a couple ways to look at this. You're right. Who in the AFC – Now, I'm not saying the Steelers would beat all these teams easily or even predict them, but they certainly have a good chance of beating any team to be in the playoffs. The winner of the AFC South, Indianapolis or Houston, they of course don't scare you. Heck, for that matter, Jacksonville's only a game out of first place at 3-6. Denver right now doesn't scare you. New England is sort of the exception. Cincinnati doesn't scare you as a team you can definitely can't beat.
Does New England scare you without Deion Lewis and Julian Edelman? Not as much.
Well, I mean, not as much, not but as much they're still going to be significant underdogs to go up to New England and win a game.
There's some
issues
there. Now, if
somebody could beat New England. Now, the wild card teams, Buffalo, the Jets, Kansas City already beat you if you're the Steelers.
All these teams can beat the Steelers, and the Steelers can beat all these teams.
Yeah, so they could theoretically go on a run. Now, my point building off that is now, if without Pouncey and without Le'Veon Bell, without Kelvin Beachum during this playoff run, you're obviously not at 100%. Do you almost feel as if this team, they don't have all their guns? Are they the same team? In other words, I think if everybody was healthy, a Super Bowl run is possible. I don't know if this team, without all those pieces, can win a Super Bowl. So it's almost like, what's the point? They can make it to the second round or whatever.
Why couldn't they win the Super Bowl? I mean, I think D'Angelo's shown that he's as capable as Le'Veon. I think the offensive lines look like they're as capable, and the defense is playing a little better. Like I said, I don't think they can endure anything more. The quarterback's going to have to play out his head. But, yeah, you can see. I mean, you look at that 05 season, there was a lot of injuries that season as well, a ton of injuries that they were able to overcome. So why can't this happen again? I mean, you can get away with, I guess, the offensive line being unhealthy, so – I mean, significant players. Now, if Antonio Brown does a black backflip and blows out his knee, then we're talking something different, right?
My Lord, I can't imagine if that happens.
I don't know.
And then Marcus Wheaton would step up.
Yeah, you know, he's
– next man up.
He's disappointing, huh? You would think that a guy that's in the slot would take some of those third down conversions and make plays out of them. Man, he just – haven't heard from him much. I don't know if
that's... Marcus Wheaton isn't going to develop into a reliable pass catcher until he doesn't sign a new contract extension. He ends up in New England.
That's what I was just going to say. Imagine him in the slot in New England. That speed,
that's one of the things that's probably going to happen. You know, it is like you're watching New England, and they're looking throughout the league for somebody some other team doesn't want. And I'm telling you, Marcus Wheaton, to me, fits that deal. You know, I just think that's what happens to guys like him. You know, he's a good enough football player But with Antonio Brown on this team and Martavis Bryant, he has no shot of getting any targets. I mean, that's just the reality. And Heath Miller, occasionally, now with Ben back, is going to get, 10 to 12 targets. That's just the way it is. But I don't want to get too far off on this thing about, where he's going to land up, the third guy in the progression here. But, going back again, the Steelers, this is a football team. And I don't know if I can harp on this enough. But I think if they continue to play good defense, and we know how this team, there is no real road game. Let's be honest, there's no road game for the Steelers, maybe the exception of New England, because they're going to have just as many people rooting and hollering and tossing those terrible towels in a playoff game, in Denver or Indianapolis or Houston or Cincinnati, as anywhere. So they can always feel at home, even on the road. I just really, this team, they're more comfortable playing on the road. Yeah, the Kansas City game being, the rare exception this year. No, I thought defensively it did okay. But, you can't have the kind of turnovers they had in Kansas City and expect to win a game. It's not like they were blown out, if I'm not mistaken. I forget what the final score was. But it was 23-13. This is a team, and boy, I was wrong on this. I just thought there was no way with the injuries that they had that they could even be close to being 500. But the defense is the difference for me. This team, if the defense continues to play this way, it's not unrealistic to think they can't make the Super Bowl. I can't believe I'm saying
you
it,
just
but
want to go to San Francisco.
This team can make the Super Bowl.
You just want to spend a week in San Francisco, Ralph. That's all.
Well, this is true too. But the reality is, can you name somebody in the AFC conference who you think this team can't beat?
No, I mean, but the problem is, I think anybody in this AFC conference can also beat them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
This is true.
So, which leads us to these teams now,
the Steelers are the team with the momentum.
Yeah, what it leads us to an earlier point is you better be playing some good ball late December. That might be all what it takes for to get there. I mean, Kansas City might be coming on a little bit too early. Indianapolis, who knows? Maybe they get things together. They got some talent on the team. If they get everything together, luck comes back. Maybe they're a force to be reckoned with.
Houston's look better, too. I mean, Houston could win that division and get a home game.
You just got a man crush on Bill O'Brien.
I do. I just want Brian Hoyer to win it ever since you've been talking
Brian
about
Hoyer,
these.
I mean, he's not even playing
Hoyer
this week.
Well, I just mean for the playoffs.
What's his name on TJ Yates?
By the way,
TJ Yates.
Johnny Manziel is now the starter for the Cleveland Browns.
Hey, Johnny Football looked decent last week. I mean, the week before on Thursday, he looked awful. I didn't think he could complete a pass. So I don't care if it was garbage time, but at least he showed he could complete a pass. I was kind of impressed.
And that's the thing is the Manziel didn't look like – it wasn't as if he just, like, ran around like a fool and threw some passes and made some big plays or some big – he actually, made consistent plays in and out, and it wasn't really. He only had one real play with his legs, in terms of running the ball. So it was, yes, it was impressive, but it wasn't. In other words, I don't think it was much of. It wasn't. You could look at it and say it was a fluky afternoon where something happened and the DB fell down or whatever it might be. Real quick, Ralph, about you're talking about Marcus Wheaton and getting in the right system or whatever.
He dropped it real quick.
Emmanuel Sanders through his first three seasons had 94 receptions over those. He had 50 in his first 2 years, 44 in his third. Marcus Wheaton had 59 his first 2 years, on pace for 26 in his third for a total of 85. Very similar numbers, very similar situations behind a Hall of Fame type guy and another guy in the receiving core. The same thing with the Emmanuel Sanders earlier on in his career.
Emmanuel Sanders ends up going to a passing offense.
You are the numbers man. I mean, that is just
Emmanuel Sanders was hurt
a lot.
Well, I mean, he played 24. He played 40 games. But yeah, that's exactly what happened. He went on to play for the Denver.
What's Emmanuel Sanders doing now with Peyton in the crapper? Not much.
Well, that's what you're trying to say. Marcus Wheaton could go to New England with Tom Brady. Yes, what we're trying to say is you get in the right situation.
He is pushing 40 now.
I'm not good.
Boy, how old's Brady compared to Manning? It's not that different, right?
And Manning
looks like an old fart.
What does Manning got to do with his point?
I think two years makes a huge difference.
It's a man. He has gone to a system that works for him and a quarterback who trusts him. That's the difference. And, Tom Brady trusts almost everybody to catch a football in New England. I don't think, I just don't think Roethlisberger actually trusts Marcus Wheaton. Or He just had tremendous trust in Antonio Brown.
But when you're Antonio Brown's open on 99% of the pass plays, and Martavius is the
he was
same.
Introduced that way yesterday.
My goodness. He was maybe that's what we're overlooking. There's just why would you throw it to Marcus Wheaton if Antonio Brown's always open?
When you had Le'Veon Bell as a target in the backfield too, and Heath Miller as a target, he almost by natural selection, he's going to be the fifth read. He's the fifth best pass catcher out there, which isn't really even a knock on him. But you have now Bell's not playing anymore.
I don't understand
but
why teams don't just do anything they can do to keep the ball away from Antonio Brown and make Martavis Bryant run something other than just a go route and make Marcus Wheaton beat you. I mean, it just make him put two guys on him. I mean, I think that was a couple years ago when Calvin Johnson was at his apex. One team just put two guys literally at the line of scrimmage and said, follow him around. It wasn't even like bracket, high or low, nothing like that. It was like two guys follow him around. I mean, Antonio Brown's getting to that point where you better stop him or he's going to put up 17 catches against you.
It's about that time of show, folks, the time everybody waits for. It's the award-winning, always duplicated but never copied something. I don't know what I'm saying. Arrow up, arrow down. We'll go out west to Ohio for our first entry. Ralph Polk, please enlighten us.
And Chris, I'm going to keep this short because I know Mark needs a lot of time to tell us what his ups and downs are. Up is Will Allen. You know, because I think Will Allen, you know, since he came back from the ankle injury, he is really – I think Mike Mitchell is kind of inspiring player. I think Will Allen is a leader in defense. I really do. I think, all those years he spent in his league, I think folks trust him. His teammates trust him, and he just has a quiet confidence about him. But he can go out there and maybe he does a little boasting, trash talking. But he does it where I don't think the opponents look at too much. Not like Mike Mitchell, but I just think he's really the guy who's kind of galvanized this defensive unit, and that's one reason why I think they're playing well, because that guy's just been superb, I think, all year long. I was going to say that one of my downs, I was going to say that why in the world did Dick LeBeau kind of muzzle this defense, and where the defensive lineman couldn't do any pass rushing. I talked the other day, to Cam Hayward and to Stephon Tuitt, and they have so much more freedom now, to rush defensive linemen. But I don't want to trash on Dick LeBeau. He's long gone to Tennessee, but already did. But quite frankly, it's hard for me to have a down, with this football team. And my easy down was special teams. They, at some point during the playoffs, You're gonna have to return the football. You're gonna have to somehow impact or influence field position, and if you don't do this in the playoffs, you're gonna have a tough time.
And that was he prefaced that whole thing was I was gonna make that quick. That was 2.5 minutes.
Wow, you got the stopwatch out and everything.
No, I looked at 9:50 when we started it. My arrow up is I can't remember. Shoot, I'll go with my arrow down. I'll go with my arrow down. Anthony Ciccolo. I know that's, scraping the bottom of the barrel there. But this guy had a tremendous start of training camp. Then he faded away. We know what happened. But he had his opportunity. He had his opportunity on Sunday to make a statement, and the guy just got swallowed up like he wasn't even there. I think those snaps.
He shouldn't have been.
Yeah, I mean, he shouldn't even have played is what I'm saying. Those snaps just disappeared. And you know what? I'm going to go arrow up. I'm going outside of the box here because he's been taking some freaking criticism. I'm going Arthur Moshe just because who cares if he ripped Johnny Football's head off. The thing is Arthur Moshe donated $300,000 to his alma mater yesterday. Plus, he's donated money to Ronald McDonald Fund. The guy is just a family guy, nice guy, and I think he deserves some credit. He's not a bad player as well. And let me tell you something. There's not a guy who – I've never seen the guy upset. The guy is the nicest guy in the world. Arthur Moshe, I'm going to give him Lifetime Achievement Award arrow up.
I saved that for you. He was my second choice for it. I saved it just for you.
All right, I took 2 minutes, Buzz. You get 2 more minutes.
Everybody gets 2 minutes.
Or you get one. You got to hurry up.
I better hurry up. You're right. I'll go with arrow up. I'll go with Cody Wallace just because, we've almost
him and Villanova. I gave Villanova an arrow up, I think it was 2 weeks ago, because we're not even talking about these guys. Villanova more so because of his story. I mean, think.
I thought you'd give Mike Munchak since you kissed his butt today in the paper.
Well, I guess by extension, I am by mentioning this guy. But Cody, well, you know, think about it. You know, Cody Wallace, we don't really talk. The offensive line's been strong. We're down at all pro at this position that we're watching this team, and we're not really – we're talking about how good the offensive line's been. I think that's a testament to – yes, I know next man up and everything else, and he's played before and he started here before. But the fact that we're more than halfway through the season and we're not really talking about a drop-off in play is a testament to Cody Wallace. Arrow down, I'll just go with Cam Thomas.
What?
Just because
he tracked down Johnny Football from behind, yeah, 20 yards down the field.
And one of his six snaps he played.
Oh, it was a heck of a snap.
It was a great play, but I'm just saying.
It was a heck of a snap.
The coaches have – if they're playing Steve McClendon in the nickel, they're playing Steve McClendon at N in the base package, they've obviously keep burying him farther and farther down the depth chart.
If we're going up and more on these downs like this, this team's in pretty good shape because we didn't have very good
downs. You're right.
Chick-a-lo,
I agree.
Cam Thomas, who was yours, Ralph? I don't even think you had one.
Dick LeBeau.
Dick LeBeau. So, I mean, we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Dick LeBeau. Dick LeBeau is special teams, baby.
And in all honesty, it actually is a testament because you're right. I look down up and down the depth chart, you try to pick somebody out. Anyway, so I guess heady times for the Steelers right now, winning two in a row. They have a dance off. We should have had a DJ introduce us to start the show. That's what we should have done. William Gay should have done that. Anyway, join us. I guess not next week. No show next week. Is that right?
Arizona,
join us in 2 weeks. Thanks to Ralph Polk and Mark Aboli and Mike Barker and everybody else.
Bring your family and friends to the Tilt to Kilt on the North Shore on November the 25th, the night before Thanksgiving, and hang out with your favorite Pittsburgh Kilt girls. There will be a water pong competition from 10 p.m. until midnight, autographed mini cornhole giveaway, and a few more awesome prizes throughout the night. $5 22-ounce Miller Lite drafts, and you get to keep the glass. Tilted Kilt, where a cold beer never looked so good. Now booking holiday parties at both Tilted Kilt locations in Pittsburgh. Brought to you by Miller Lite.